Welcome to the Empowering Industry Podcast, a production from Empowering Pumps and Equipment as the voice of the pump and related equipment industry. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Empowering Industry Podcast. I'm your host, Charlie Matthews. What a great day I have. I'm in the office. I am on the mic. I am so excited to be back. I have had a whirlwind travel tour, it seems, from the whole end of 2023. But now, Tyler, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you got going on?
Hi, Charlie. Thanks for having me. I've got less of a whirlwind going on than you, it sounds like, having just gotten back from Africa. I'm in little old Pennsylvania where I live. My name's Tyler Hake. I'm the Vice President of Sustainability and Services at Schneider Electric in our digital buildings business. I spend a lot of time working with our customers around their decarbonization strategies, and I love doing it. And gets a little bit about myself to get things started. I'm recently moved to Pennsylvania. I live in Lancaster, Pennsylvania now. I was living in New York City the last 7 years. So
okay,
a lot of change going on.
Yes. Two great places to live though. But you know, last time Absolutely. I was in, well, not the last time, but I love going to think about Hershey chocolate. It's somewhere within Pennsylvania, somewhere up there. It's a lot of fun to go to that.
Very close.
How did you get started in this industry?
So, I mean, it's a great question. I think it's an important one because we need more and more people to get into, you know, the decarbonization journey that we're on in society. Essentially, I went to college at Virginia Tech. I've always been really interested in buildings. So I got into the civil engineering world with an interest just in, you know, building construction, building design. And by the time I was finishing, I started really focusing on things that I thought could make a big change. This was back in 2008, 2009, when we're learning about things like the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and climate change in general and everything that was going on. So it made me want to get involved in decarbonization and emission reduction. And it set me kind of down the path to working with customers and selling and conversing on the topic. And every step has kind of fueled my fire and put me in the position that I'm at now, which is, you know, to really kind of steer some of the strategy for some strategic customers.
Yeah, I noticed that. And I noticed the environmental engineering part of your degree as well. And I was curious about that, like, was that always in there? Because we do talk so much about sustainability, and that's one element of that, of kind of protecting the environment, or what can we do to better the environment?
Yeah, so I studied civil and environmental engineering. It was always something that was, you know, compelling to me. But honestly, Charlie, I could say it's 2023 now. So it was around, I guess I made the decision to get into that field, you know, close to 20 years ago. And, you know, it was more of a personal interest then, and it's more of a calling for people that are going to school now just because of the challenges that we face. So I'm proud that I was able to get into it. I will say that there's some luck involved. I don't think I necessarily realized, you know, what a force this topic would be and how front of mind it is to so many organizations that we work with. But again, it gives me so much personal drive. And our mission at Schneider Electric is to be our customer's digital partner for sustainability and efficiency. So I found a place that works really well for what I want to
Absolutely.
Accomplish.
It's pairing so well, and definitely with what we're talking about today, I really wanted to ask you this question. I love it. It's a great question. What will it take to make net zero buildings a reality? I mean, it's such a great question. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So I think one thing that's great about the question is, you know, what will it take to make them a reality? The good thing is they do exist. You know, there are net zero buildings today, which is really cool. You know, one of my favorites is the Unisphere project in Silver Spring, Maryland. It's a flagship building for United Therapeutics. It deploys Schneider Electric EcoStruxure Building Operation, Building Advisor, which are, you know, some of the services that we provide. And it allows for this, the largest net zero facility in the Northeast in an urban environment. It's hard to do this, right? So the good news is these do exist. They can happen. The reason that you asked me this question is because we know the vast majority of buildings are not net zero. We also know that 50% of buildings that will be around in the year 2050 exist today. So a lot of what we need to tackle isn't the new construction facility that we're putting out there. And there are plenty of those. And oftentimes they've got great design principles, you know, to look towards net zero. We've got this huge building stock of facilities that we need to bring to net zero in order to meet our climate change commitments. Like anything else, you know, net zero is an outcome that customers are looking for in their facilities. And you might have a healthcare facility where one of the outcomes they're after is patient experience and patient satisfaction. But for many, or if not all, building owners now, one of the outcomes that's in the horizon is net zero. When you're after an outcome, there's some pretty good processes to follow that I like to stick to. So I think what we'll need to see for a net zero building future is vision. You know, a building owner or operator needs to say, this is something that's important. It's a path that we need to go down and an outcome that we need to get to. And I am going to take the onus to make these commitments for us. That needs to happen. There needs to be incentive. You know, there's got to be a what's in it for me of all the different stakeholders that are in this world to say, yeah, I should put together a business case around being able to do this for customers. Or there's a reason, you know, that I work for a company that has net zero goals. There's an incentive. There's really like a purpose behind this. You need that vision. You need that incentive. We need skills, which is why I was hitting a little bit on, you know, how jealous I am for people that are getting into school now because they've got this future in front of them. Hopefully there are more and more people who are learning about design principles and techniques and technologies that can allow for this net zero building future. And I'm confident that there are. You need resources. You have those things. That's great. You need technologies. A lot of times we focus on technology for net zero building. Again, I look at it as an outcome. We need technologies in place that allow us to do this. A lot of them exist at Schneider Electric. I mentioned EcoStruxure Building Operation, Building Advisor. We've got all these, you know, great ways to go about doing it. But those are just, you know, some examples of resources. Other resources, stimulus dollars. You know, there's the IIJA and all these things that are out there. Now, these are resources that allow us to pursue this path. And then lastly, you know, we need an action plan, right? So incentive, vision, resources, skills, but we need a plan to actually get there. The Unisphere project that I talked about, you know, that's one of my favorite net zero building stories. They had an action plan that brought stakeholders to the table early and said, here's what we're after. We need people from these trades from the very beginning in our design process. And this is how we're going to go about taking action. And so really that piece, I think is the thing that can be operationalized. And I'd like to see a lot more of it.
Yeah. When you said stakeholders, it really made me think about, you know, all the ESG programs that are out there and what do we need to know? I know you've got a lot of experience in this area, and I think the action, it has to have stakeholders involved, but then what do our individual companies, you know, our individual employees and team leaders and, you know, what do they do in that space?
Yeah. So, I mean, ESG, you know, we hear ESG a lot, you know, what it's environmental, social, and governance. Why does it exist, right? It exists because it's a, you know, it's a way for us to look at organizations and say, yeah, that's the type of organization I'd like to invest in. Or importantly, that's the type of organization that I'd like to work for. So I think, you know, lots of companies have strong ESG principles in place because they're looking for that, you know, those new leaders, people that are looking for, you know, a mission-driven professional career. Oftentimes for, you know, the conversations that I have, the environmental piece is what we're really talking about when we get to ESG. And so what do we do with that, right? At Schneider, we like to say strategize, digitize, and decarbonize. That's kind of our path towards net zero, and that's a really good philosophy for us. The strategize piece fits really well with the environmental part of ESG. We have a commitment. We're going to be net zero by 2035. You know, we're going to reduce our emissions by 50% by 2030. We're going to publish that. It's going to be out there, and that's our vision that we're going to work towards. This is where I have the privilege of working with our customers along with our other account managers to really engage with the customers that we have these long-standing trusted advisor positions with to say, okay, here's your goal. Here's where you want to get to. This is the commitment that you made in accordance with your ESG. Let's put together the strategy, the roadmap, the action plan that I mentioned. And then once you have that strategy in place, the next thing to do is to digitize. We know we're here today. We know we want to get here tomorrow. How do we measure that? What's our baseline today? Where do we stand? How do we know we're hitting our KPIs and metrics along the way? So there's lots of digitization that happens in buildings. You hear about the Internet of Things. You hear about digital technologies. That's really in place for us to measure and then to drive digital changes that allow us to optimize our facilities. And then the last piece that allows us to hit these ESG goals is decarbonize. So electrification. You might see, Charlie, organizations talking about their electric vehicle strategies, their on-site renewables, their microgrids. All of these go into, you know, how you can realize your net zero goals, which are often part of your environmental portion of your ESG. So it sort of trickles down that way into the way that we get to work with our customers through the commitments that companies and organizations make.
Well, I love that. And I think you're uniquely positioned here, whether you picked it out or not, but to be on that civil engineering side and environmental, I feel like I want to tell people, like, there are so many opportunities in this space, even if that's not what you went to school for, or even if it, you know, maybe you weren't in the space and then you're ready to be in this space and make a difference.
I mean, so you might be able to tell in talking to me, but I think the passion part is really important. And like, these are long careers, you know, there are lots of ways to get into the stuff that we work on that are important to help move the ball forward if you care about what we're doing and kind of the groundswell towards decarbonization. So my track record of having an engineering degree has really helped me. Some of the smartest people that I get to work with are marketers, communication specialists, accountants. You know, accountants are very important. There's stuff that all of us can do. And I think it really just comes down to, you know, I'm proud to work for a company that has a mission that does. And I think that translates into, you know, being able to pull some extra weight.
Absolutely. And I also noticed, because I look at everyone's LinkedIn profile, I have to just mention this because you did some work with Engineers Without Borders. And I've heard about this program. I just think it's really interesting, but it's also just another way of looking outside of like, okay, this is our degree. I'm branded an engineer now. What do I do with that? But this is an additional way to use your, you know, your skills and your expertise. Tell us a little bit about it.
You did your research for one. I mean, Engineers Without Borders, again, I'm dating myself a little bit, but that was when I got to be the vice president of Engineers Without Borders at Virginia Tech while I was an undergrad. I did my junior and senior year. And we put together, you know, basically a chapter of this organization that looks at beyond the borders of the U.S. So there's a humanitarian component to putting your engineering practice to work. And, you know, we had a pumping project, actually, which would probably be near and dear to your heart, that was in Uganda. I didn't go. We had people that did go from our group to implement a pumping system to get water from wells and to a village that was in Uganda. I think what was really important for me was just to see the impact that you can make if you want to, you know, put some of your skills to work. Obviously, now I'm doing some of that, and a lot of my peers are for decarbonization. It also helped me get to work with some really smart people that I'm still in connection with today. Kind of taught me the power of networking. I literally just got a Christmas card from our treasurer, and this was 20 years ago, probably just the other day. So,
see, really I great think those experience. Those connections are so important. The experience that you were mentioning on, you know, how to, you know, work on a project together and what does that look like? And I was just in Uganda, so that was kind of special to me that the project was there. And so, you know, I see the communities that need that and their infrastructure is different. So, you know, we have to take a worldview on this. Definitely if we're going to look at, you know, net zero buildings here, what does that mean for the rest of the world? So we do have to think about it. And we have to really have people on our teams, you know, with the vision that can see that far ahead and can really set our team into action. So I appreciate that. And I want to give you kind of the opportunity, if there's anything else you want to tell our listeners today. And then, you know, I do have to do a rapid fire at the end, but I'll give you the last word at the moment.
I'd love that. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. Sure. I mean, there's lots on the topic of net zero buildings and decarbonization that I find to be, you know, really important. I think first and foremost, you know, when we think about the journey and it seems like it can be complicated or daunting, I think, you know, what I've seen work really well is working with the people that you trust, your trusted advisors. So we've had a lot of privileged opportunity in what I do to have longstanding relationships with customers that have worked with us at Schneider Electric for 20, 30, 40 years, solving all sorts of problems. Maybe traditionally they were operational problems, keep your building up and running. Now you've got a new problem. How do I decarbonize? the best thing to do is just turn to the folks that you've got, shared reliance with. I've seen that to be really effective. And then, in that same vein, Charlie, buildings and emissions, 30% of the emissions that you'll see in a building happen during the design and construction phase. And then 70%, so all the buildings that we think about in the world, 70%, that's the operation phase. So a net zero building and the decarbonization future that we're after and all this existing building stock, what's really important is to think about how we operate and service and digitize these facilities. The service landscape is very important. And we really focus here at Schneider on digital service, enabling digital service, using the value that technology gets us to make sure we're solving the problems that matter the most first when we work with our customers. And we can prioritize those around decarbonization and emissions. So any customer who says, I'm really interested in reducing my carbon emissions, we can perform service through digital tools that show us fixing this air handler, fixing this pump is going to have the biggest bang for your buck first. We can rack and stack that way. I think it's a really, really good way for all of us to produce quick, big wins that have payback that we can then invest in our facilities for electrification, decarbonization, anything else that we'd like to do. So those are a few things that I'd like to capture. Go to the people that you trust. A lot of times those are your service providers. Use digital service. Let's be smart about the way that we service our facilities. And I think that we'll get further faster that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I love digital around here. It's speaking my language. And perfect. I do hope people will adapt to that much faster than when I was trying to encourage people on social media. But Tyler, I'm curious about you a little bit. And so I always ask these questions. What is your favorite book?
I've got a couple of them behind me. So there's three that live behind me. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance is my favorite.
I'm going to have to look this up. This is so new for me.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a meandering philosophical book about somebody who's basically riding their motorcycle across the country. Unknown author who just wrote an incredible book that people love. Peter Thiel's 0 to 1 is a book that I go back to a lot. It really does. A lot of what you heard me talk about today is probably comes from some of the philosophies that he has in terms of taking something from nothing to something really quickly. And then Ray Dalio's Principles is a book that I go back to that gives me some process that I can apply to some of my, ideating and strategic thinking. So those are the three that I would say. I'll give you three instead of one. So.
That's all right. I like resources. I'm going to make a list of all these resources. Okay. What about music? You got any favorite tunes?
Yeah. So I think the bands that I would go to are probably other ones that maybe you'll have to research. I don't know. Maybe who knows? But I listen to a lot of Future Islands. I listen to a lot of Beach House. I listen to a lot of Yeah Yeah Yeahs. So it's a mix of like indie punk and some kind of ambient music.
Awesome. Awesome. I don't know those, but now I will. And I bet Becca does. I'm going to ask her. What is the best advice that you've ever received?
Oh, so that's a really good one. I have to go to the person that I work with most frequently at Schneider Electric, who has kind of taught me to embed process into some of the things that I do. So, I don't know, some of the folks that you chat with, you probably have some people on here who have ideas, who are optimistic, who are positive and want to see change. And hopefully, I've kind of conveyed some of that as being my natural state. I've gotten advice around embedding process to that sort of outlook that allows me to kind of keep guardrails around some of my thinking so I don't spin out and I can maintain productivity. I think that that's really kind of worked very well for me over the last probably 3, 4, 5 years is finding things that you can refer back to that kind of give you a North Star and some guardrails with some of the ideas and thoughts that you have.
I love that so much. And I used to always think about routine and kind of doing the same thing over and over again. And it would just drive, like, that's not me. But yeah. Somebody told me that if you do that, like, let's say you have the same coffee routine or breakfast routine, you actually save energy because you don't have to think about it. And you can use that energy for something else. And I was like, okay, I can get on board with that. So totally love that. And the processes, that's what we're talking about here is what is that process to save energy? So I love it. Okay, last question. If you were talking to somebody who was coming into our industry What advice would you give them?
Choose your own adventure. So basically, the advice that I would give anybody who's coming into our industry is there's room for all sorts of creative pursuits and big ideas. This is a lot of stuff is not solved. And frankly, there are some big problems that need to be solved. That's going to take a different type of thinking and a different, you know, level of motivation. So anybody who is coming into our industry, regardless of what their background is, I would encourage them to, you know, be their authentic self and try to find ways to make their career work for them in the same way that they are working for, you know, their career. Because you'll find that you can make large contributions when you work that way. And sometimes it takes a little bit of nudging and maybe some courage to feel confident enough to do that. But anybody who's in our industry, there's plenty of room for great ideas and innovation. We need more of it.
Yay. I totally agree with that. 100%. Well, I have had such a fun time with you, Tyler. I could talk to you forever. So much good information, good resources, and just energy and passion. It makes me excited. It makes me, you know that, well, for one, it's reality. There are buildings right here that are net zero, which is amazing. And, yeah, you know, look at the future, right? That we have such bright and talented people, all different backgrounds coming together to have this sustainable world. So, Tyler, if people want to reach out to you, how do they get in touch?
So I'm on LinkedIn, Tyler Haak. That's H-A-A-K, Haak. That's probably the best way to get to me. And I'd love to hear from folks, and I'll be checking. These conversations they're fun, they're insightful, they add energy. And I think that the more outreach that we can have, the better. So please do hit me up on LinkedIn. That's the best way to do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And y'all, please like, subscribe. I was just, you know, talking to somebody about how important it is to subscribe to these channels that you like, especially on YouTube. This can really help people. So go ahead and like and subscribe, share this video. You know, let us know what you really want us to talk about, who you want us to interview. Feedback. We love feedback here. So do all of those things. And until next time, be empowering.